And we talk about quite a riveting read, which I'm definitely looking forward to just sinking my teeth into. So, you know, especially when it comes to children's narratives, as the stories that we hear or that we have heard as children do shape so much of how much we think and how much and how we act. And that's why it's so important that so many children's stories contain lessons and morals, and that we can also learn right from wrong. And of course, on another level, it shapes the way that we see people. And of course, since many popular stories are westernized, we might feel excluded from that narrative. So, you know, just having said that, there are many people looking to change that. And these three ladies have done just that. So, and of course, this has been changing more and more. We're in an age where more African stories are being told right now, told and written. And one of them, which I'm proud to talk about right now, is Her story, Daughters of Mujaji. And this is the first in a planned children's book series for 7 to 12 year old girls, but of course boys are also more than welcome to read them. And this features African women whose lives inspire, and the women in the book are from diverse settings, and their stories reflect not only on the multiple roles that women play in society, but also the obstacles that they face as a result of race, class, and most importantly, their gender. So joining me right now to talk about her story, Daughters of Mujaji, are two of the three co-authors, Natasha Ali, Baba Tamani Qubule, and of course, I need to credit Tandiwe Matthews as the third author, but I will be joined by the first two. Good morning, ladies, and welcome to Cape Talk. Now, you are all you all have very different day jobs. So Natasha, you're a projects manager for the Oliver and Adelaide Tambo Foundation. Baba, you're an economist at Tips, and Tandiswa is an attorney. So I just have to start with you, Natasha. How did you actually all come to be writers of these books? Has it always been an aspiration?
Not actually at all. Do you want an honest answer?
Please do. Honesty is always welcome. This is Cape Talk. We can take anything. Go for it.
We got together on a Friday afternoon. There may or may not have been wine involved, and we just spoke about how there's such a huge gap in the market about stories that, as young Black girls, you know, we don't know the stories of women who preceded us, Black women, powerful women, women who failed, women who succeeded. And that's how it happened. It was just chatting as friends about why we know these stories individually, but as a collective Black unit, we don't know the stories of the collective Black female unit, and that's how it happened.
And I think, and it's inspiring because, I mean, clearly, whether or not there was wine involved, even if there was wine, that's perfectly fine. Wine has inspired many great final products, end results. Yes. So yes, yay for wine, first of all. And then, secondly, yes, when it comes to something of this feat, this is just extraordinary and it's amazing. And, I just want to find out, Baba, for you, what did it mean to you when you came together to write this book? What are your sentiments? Do you also agree with Natasha?
I definitely agree with Natasha, and I was not part of the I'm part of the group of girls.
Yes.
But when there was wine involved, I unfortunately was left out that day. But I came onto that project because I had a conversation with my younger sister, who is just going into first year, who said she doesn't know any women of color who are South African who are at a caliber of white women she looks up to. And I thought that surely is a reflection of the lack or the invisibility of women, Black women in South Africa, past and present, who've contributed to, empowering themselves, the communities around them. And I think what's important in our stories, there are 30 individual and groups of women in the book. So we've got women like, Tash, you can help me with this one. We've got Umanyana, who's a collective.
Empower, that's a collective.
Says
but also individuals like Nonkulu Leko Gobodo and Emma Mashinini,
who I feel, yes, we are retrospectively looking at their lives, but they went through things that every woman or young girl goes through. So we touch on mental issues. We go around, the book is centered around specific themes, which are all aiming to affirm a little girl. So all of these stories, these 30 women, whether they're individuals or groups of women, we try and use affirming language to say, you know, just because you're a black woman doesn't mean your story must start with despite your struggle. Mm. So that was one important element for me. And of course, personally, you know, having a younger sister who felt, you know, there was no one to look up to in South Africa.
And isn't it quite surprising? I mean, as the more that we talk about this, and especially in the day and age that we're living in now, I mean, representation is everything. We are now bold enough and proud enough to say that we are African. We have narratives, and we're going to provide our future generation with positive narratives about the people who are at the forefront of changing society, especially in their respective fields. And you know, as I was just as you were just talking, one of the books that actually did come to mind for me was the Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls. And right. You know, from them, for well, in that context, that was from a gender perspective and having females portrayed positively in and it's actually, again, just like these are real women, they're real women, real global icons, female icons, as opposed to your damsels in distresses, whereas, you know, that is one that is actually a very a tired and exhausted narrative that we can no longer relate to as women, because women have made so many progressive strides in society, professionally, personally. So I thought of this, and would you say that this would be the answer to that, but except you take it a step further by providing narratives about female, strong female, powerful African women?
Okay, I'll just
yes.
I'll go ahead.
Yes, Natasha, yes.
And Bubs, always jump in.
Yes,
sure. The thing is, yes, Rebel Girls, definitely, it's amazing. We specifically wanted to make it South African because
yes.
We're three South African women. And we wanted... We were talking actually today about, you know, there's so many books about, and this is not to take away from anyone, but there's books, even like set works and books that are given to young schoolgirls where like their heroines are, oh God, Penny Haynes and
yes.
Yeah, and Oscar Pistorius and Amelia Earhart and Oscar Pistorius, I can't even get it.
Yeah, funny enough, yes, I was actually about to mention.
A friend of ours today who is a teacher was telling us that in the set work for the DBE, like, that's still who is in the book, you know? But it's also like global books. So the books that we get as young South Africans are still books that are westernized. It's still books that they aren't African books. And when you're a little girl, the biggest, I think, influence for us is just that there's so many women who you take for granted as a young black girl that we have had the blessing of knowing that we don't even understand to other little girls how great their achievements are. Like, we know Kasa Semenya as just a woman, and she's fast, and she's amazing, and she's overcome so much, but we don't know that her story can impact the life of somebody who doesn't know her story, is wherever she is, might be the fastest little girl, the fastest little boy, whatever, in his class, because we don't really want it to just be four little girls.
Yes.
But we just want a story that it's not told like, this was so hard, this was so hard, this was so hard, this was so hard.
Right.
And she did this. It's just that there are so many things. People face obstacles. People have hard times. People, you know, people get abused. And that's something I have to be very honest about. We don't yes. sugarcoat anything in the book. There are people who get hurt. There are people who are abused. There are people who face devastating times because these are real lives we're talking about. It's not a fairy tale. And to say to children that sometimes you're sad, sometimes you deal with addiction or your parents are dealing with addiction, and yet these are inspirational stories that you can draw, like, you know, not a fable out of. It's not
yes.
this thing that's unattainable. It's a real story. It's a real person. You'll hear the surname Mandela, you know, when you're driving on, I don't know, Empire Road and you see like Sizwe Ntsaluba Gobodo, you know, like Gobodo, you might not know where it comes from, but it comes from a very powerful black South African female chartered accountant. And you might not know it before, but you'll know it after the book.
And that's exactly, yes. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
If I was to just add to Natasha in answering your question.
Yes, sure, yes.
I would say that, firstly, I think it's a little bit unfair to compare, you know, books. Because yeah, I think right. It's okay for us to also be contributing just as much as Rad Stories was contributing to the visibility
Rebel
of women.
Girls.
Of course, of course.
Rebel Girls. Mm. But I would say ours is different in that it's not just 30 stories or sort of descriptive kind of analysis of like somebody's life, but we try to center stories around chapters that were affirming. So chapter one is I Love Myself. We Have Fighting Power becomes the next chapter, and these women are grouped in those chapters. And then each chapter is accompanied by a comic strip, which kind of, again, affirms it, or rather talk to, you know, the themes of affirmation after each chapter. So we kind of are centering the readers around, you know, why we chose these specific women, because there are so many women we could have, I mean, God, we had so many more women, like 50, you know, we had to count down to 30. But we definitely are different in that it is very strong, the message we're trying to put across, why we chose these specific women and what you little girls relate to. And
And you know, it's as you are talking about just the different women, and I mean, it could not have been easy narrowing it down from 50 to 30, because I'm sure they all have quite a few unique, inspiring and different stories, because it's about diversity as well. I mean, these are women from
impossible.
All walks of life. Yes, yes, exactly. And also just highlighting that, you know, that just to envision that a better life for yourself is possible, that you can fulfill your dreams, especially as young children of color. And of course, yes, I love how you included boys in the beginning, because also this also drives home the fact for them that there are strong examples of women, that women are their equals, and especially in such a patriarchal society, we need more stories like that to show women in positive and powerful and inspirational lights as well, you know.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Yeah, and
Baba, I'd love to just pose this next question to you. When it comes to, because as we were saying, there are 30 women that are featured in the book. And yes, you have heard of some of the many South African women, but are there any, unlikely heroes that we can find in this book? Can you give us just one or two names without giving away too much of their story?
I'll give away one group,
okay,
which is unlikely, which is Umanyano, and that is the Women's Methodist sort of union, and that is a relatively untold story in mainstream media about, you know, how these women actually came to be a group and how it wasn't very easy without telling the whole story. And how essentially we little kids, all of us, regardless of your age, relate to having your mother dress up in a red, you know, top, a white hat, a black skirt, coming together with other women, and essentially the backbones in good time and bad time of many of our communities. And then another story which, you know, I wouldn't say is unlikely, but people wouldn't expect it in a children's book, is the Bessie Head story.
Yes.
So those are two groups I would say are possibly unlikely. Yes.
And for you, Natasha, who are the unexpected women that feature? Which ones actually stood out for you? And you thought, yes, we had to include these two. Their stories are unique. They need to be told.
Gosh. It's so hard to pick two, because the purpose for us was to tell stories that were as diverse as possible, like whether it's a sports person or a scientist or a dancer or a you know, like, we wanted to give little people, I guess, the most diverse thing. But I would say maybe Zanele Moholi, the photographer and the artist, for the sake of, and that sounds so callous, but yes, to include somebody who's so important and so impactful in the LGBTIQ space was very important for us. And then I'd also say, gosh, we have a hair scientist, and her name is Nonhlanhla Khumalo, and she studies black African hair specifically. And for me, that was amazing. There's an amazing, like, black hair movement that's happening, and just to understand how magical black hair is, and for it to not to be something that's something to be ashamed of, or something like, black hair is an amazing thing. So I think, yeah, those two might be two of the unlikelier, but very, very necessary stories.
I must say, as you are just describing each of these two powerful women, I am definitely intrigued by the last lady when it comes to just embodying the whole concept of embracing your Africanness, African beauty. And that's what we want to drive home to these girls as well, because I mean, they're bombarded with and even young boys bombarded with westernized images of what the world standard or the global standard of beauty is. And actually we as Africans, we are all beautiful, especially with our hair being in its natural state, and just owning that and owning that proudly. And also just, I mean, with what you're doing, having with what you've also done, just collectively with the book, having ownership over this African narrative, and ensuring that we keep ownership, maintain it. And, you know, speaking of which, when it comes to working on the book, Natasha, just love to just to ask you just this want to ask you this question in regards to just the process in regards to writing the book. What was it like for each of you? Yes, Natasha, I'll start with you.
I want to tell you, but I honestly can't tell you, just because.
Why?
It was such a weird process, because we sat down, we went away on a weekend to write. We had narrowed the list down, we divided the names up, and we went away and we sat down and we wrote. But as we were writing, we were talking and we were debating and we were disagreeing and it was the most beautiful thing to witness, even amongst ourselves, like, stories coming to life and then arguing which aspect of a story you wanted to bring through the most, and which you know, just the diversity within each story, because these people are so amazing that their lives are so intriguing that it was difficult, especially for a children's book. You could write biographies on each one of these women, so to limited to like 200 words, applicable for children. It was incredibly difficult, but it was the most, I think, humbling experience to do it. Firstly, as a group of friends, as the three of us, and also just to try and put how awesome one human being and then 30 human beings can be into 200 words, and then, you know, 30 times 200 words, because it's not the time for maths. But
true. Yes.
To do that, it was incredible. It felt hard, but it felt like, sometimes it felt so easy because it was so necessary, like the stories were coming through you that they needed to be told. And sometimes it was just like, there's so much, how do you begin to explain this amazing person in 200 words? So it was honestly, like, it was a blessing, really, if I can put it that plainly.
And you felt that it was meant to be part of your purpose to relay these wonderful narratives.
And it was
bigger
than us, and it was just always meant to be. When we were little, this didn't exist. So the fact that we can do this for little girls and just for South Africa as a whole. It sounds very like Miss South Africa-esque, that, you know, I just want to
repeat.
Yes, but I don't mean it like that.
Jump in there. I agree with Tash. It was definitely a healing process, one for ourselves.
Yeah,
there, yes. You know, I love myself. I found that I wish I'd heard or gone through that, you know, at much younger phases. Some of the stories I wrote, I felt I was parenting my inner child, if you know what I mean.
But sometimes also your inner adult, right? There's still lessons you were learning writing this.
Of course.
That's when, like, gosh, that's incredible.
And at the same, I'm very proud that we did it in a very, we used a feminist approach. It went beyond us as well. Each of the visuals, or rather the illustrations, are actually done by kids from schools as well. So we really try to make it an inclusive writing process. So I consider the actual illustrations as part of the writing process.
Yeah.
Because they were very important in telling the story. But it was an incredibly difficult process for me. I just, you know, as an economist, you're writing for kids now. Like, it's completely different. You know, you're not talking about exchange rate.
That's it.
Export. So a lot of the time I had to talk myself back into the project. Natasha is actually a fantastic writer for kids. But I think we pulled each other through our strength.
And just working collaboratively on this, and I'm just inspired by how you both took it upon yourself to just thrust yourselves out of your comfort zones. I mean, coming from the different respective fields that you do come from, and the different spaces that you occupy. When it comes to your respective fields, now you're coming together, you're doing something completely different, and now it's the fruits of your labor have actually, the end result of your fruits of your labor. It's here. The book is it's right here. It's arrived, and now you are at, you know, you're on the other side of this journey. And, you know, when it comes to just, I mean, I find it quite inspiring that, you know, you two came together. Well, the three of you actually with, Tandiwe came together just to pen this all. And I wanted to find out also, when it came to putting the book together, did you guys say, okay, I'd love to work on this person, I'll work on this person. Did you split it up accordingly, or was it all collective in the sense where you worked on one person at a time to just, you know, to give them that due time, or how did you work that out?
We definitely had to divide it up. We would still be writing today.
Yes.
One person. We also write so differently, the three of us, and it's personality based, it's profession based, it's, you know, what we studied. Like Bubs was saying, she's an economist. My background is management and marketing. Tandy's an attorney. We write very differently. So we split it up, and then we wrote, then we edited each other, then the publisher edited us, then we edited the publisher, then the publisher re-edited. You know, like, it's been back and forth where we can probably recite the book to you without even looking
at it at all. And in Zulu, probably.
Yes, exactly. You could all, in your sleep.
Which I need to say is probably my favorite aspect of the book, next to the fact that, you know, we sourced, like Bub said, we sourced young girls to do the illustrations, and they had to go and do independent research. So they didn't even read our stories necessarily. They had to go and research the women we chosen and then illustrate based on their own interpretation of the women. The next best aspect is that every book is Zulu and English. So when you, on the one side, it's completely English, and when you flip it around, it's the Zulu book. So you're basically getting two books in one. And that was so important to us from the beginning that, you know, we live in a country with 11 official languages. You can't be telling the stories of women who you know, a lot, for a lot of them, English is not their mother tongue.
Yes.
You know, how dare you write a story that's just in English?
True. Not in this country, yes.
Not in this day and age.
Exactly, exactly. And, you know, I will definitely come back to the English and Zulu aspect in a second, that element. But I just love to take this moment just to introduce you to our listeners, especially those of the listeners who have just tuned in. You are listening to The Late Night Show on Cape Talk, and we are talking about a wonderful new publication that celebrates African women, or African queens, as I'd love to call them, because they have thrived and conquered, and now they feature in this beautiful book called Her Story, Daughters of Mujaji, which is available in English and Zulu, and it is a reverse publication, which is even more brilliant. And so now with this book, I'd just love to ask you, Baba, as well, in regards to just the title, why Daughters of Mujaji?
We actually went back and forth, obviously, with a number of titles. But the main reason why we went with Daughters of Mujaji is because of the book, the 30 women being located in South Africa or Southern Africa. This is the first in a series. So the other two books in the series will be 30 women from other countries in the rest of Africa. So that's basically, I don't know, Tash, you can, that's as clear as I can make it.
I think, okay, so the history of Mujaji is she's a Southern African queen and from the Balopedu tribe, and they're now, well, for the, you know, most of modern society based in Limpopo. And we chose Daughters of Mujaji because, you know, it's Southern African. She's a queen. She's the rain queen. Rain brings blessings. And we just wanted to, for the region, honor queens of this region. So if the next book is, you know, East African, we'll choose an East African queen. If the book, you know, following that is West African, it will be Daughters of a West African Queen. But we just wanted to emphasize, because also you can never overemphasize, the fact that as women, as South African women, as Black South African women, we hail from greatness. We come from a long lineage of inspiring and amazing women, which obviously is what the book is all about, but also above and beyond that, you know, we come from queens, whether they bring rain or shine, you know, we hail from greatness.
And so who are we not to be? Because
how dare we not, you know, be great?
Exactly.
They have already fought so many battles for us. So we stand on their shoulders.
We do, we do. We stand on their shoulders and we continue to tell the stories. And, you know, we actually do have stories of our own to tell. And, you know, as we are just having this conversation, I'm just loving everything that I am hearing, and especially in regards to, just how transformative this particular publication will be. I'd love to ask you both personally, Natasha, who is your personal inspiration as a South African woman of color in your life, that probably also may have inspired you to proceed with this huge project?
Oh goodness, I can't like say one person, but I can say just every woman, whether it's my mom or my aunt or my gran or my friends, like every woman I found that, especially as I get older, the women that influence me on a day-to-day basis are definitely the inspiration for this book, whether they're related to me or I've chosen to make them my family as I've gone in my life. I think as I've grown as my own person, as I've learned who I don't want to be, so many important women have been part of that journey and have helped me realize who I am and who I want to be, who I don't want to be. So I think all of them in different ways, which is why I think I can't, you know, single out one person, just my entire lineage, be it biological or not, and be it retrospective or everyday, you know, everybody has influenced me to write this story, because every female has her story, you know?
And true. And I think it's drawing from each woman's personal story that allows you to just forge ahead with your own and create quite a unique story that will impact future generations to come. And, you know, who knows? I may be reading about either of your stories soon in another publication because you inspired somebody else. And for you, Baba, do you also feel that there's one particular woman or maybe a group of women that you personally feel are just also on the same caliber as the women who are featured in her story?
I would say I was raised by my grandparents, so I would definitely say my grandmother, who always used to say, you know, don't doubt yourself. You know, in fact, both my grandparents used to say, you know, never doubt yourself, never doubt yourself. So from a young age, I've always had a sense that I have my own voice. Even when I battled with it, I still subconsciously had that affirmation. And they were both, let me say, my grandmother was quite a rebel in the church. And I used to watch her and admire the way in which she was so confident in who she is, and she didn't care what people thought. So even in writing this book, as much as it's nerve-wracking, I actually was saying to Natasha and Tandy, you know, for me, this was such a healing process, and I want to thank both of them, and they are women that I would add to the list, who helped me in healing from the death of my grandparents. So if for anything, you know, I really don't care if it doesn't do well. Obviously, the publishers will kill me for saying that.
I think don't be so modest. I think it just may be quite a successful read. Yes, absolutely.
It was just a great healing project. So, you know, I get that sense of, you know, connecting humanity. And I admire that a lot in my grandmother and the women I've been fortunate to work with.
And isn't that just something within our own circles? We know exactly who we can turn to for inspiration. And, you know, as we are talking about this, I think about those young girls who have not had female figures in their lives. And, you know, just from this publication alone, as soon as they read about all of the amazing women that feature, that those role models for them, those could be, you know, those beacons for them, those women who teach them how to be women and how to own their gift, how to nurture their Africanness and who they are. So this is definitely vital, especially in the emotional development of many young girls. And of course, the young boys who are also always more than welcome to read it. As a matter of fact, I'm actually thinking.
They should read it more.
Yes. Absolutely. Yeah. Yes. I'm actually thinking of purchasing it for my 6-year-old nephew. So just so that he understands that there's a strong lineage of women, and I will happily read it to him at bedtime. I will do so with absolute pride. And yes, you know, this is phenomenal. It's amazing. And also now I'd love to just ask you about, the publisher of choice, why you chose them. And as I understand, this is the first publication for Kaloza Books. And why did you particularly approach them? Why did you feel that they would understand your vision? Baba,
I'm
yes.
definitely leading this year.
Natasha, I'm conflicted. Okay, so, I mean, I can happily answer it, but for obvious reasons, I think it's best that you answer the question.
Okay. It's an easy answer. We chose them, they're such a tiny little publishing house, and it felt like
they were very clear.
We were family. Like, we wanted to write the black female owned, the, you know, they're three people, we're three people. It's, you know, it was just, it just clicked that a black female publishing house, I guess, would understand why it was so important to tell the story of, you know, South African females. It was an easy choice that, you know, we could have gone to a bigger publishing house and it would have been great, I'm sure, but also just to keep it as personal and as healing, like Bob says, and as self-actualizing as it turns out to be, we needed a publishing house that was so desperate for the stories to be told as we were. That was it. The need from us was as profound as it was for them.
They were also very clear about the values that they would like to put across, and those aligned with exactly what we wanted to put across in the book. And of course, it was a woman, Phoebe Potgieter, Gule, and she was just very, very clear and convincing that she would be able to deliver not just any book, but put across exactly what we wanted to put across to little girls.
Yeah. She didn't try to change the essence of what we were trying to tell. It wasn't about turning the stories into fairy tales or sugarcoating them. It was keeping them real and keeping them relatable and keeping them relevant completely. And even though, you know, a lot of the stories are very hard stories to tell. I mean, for example, and I know I shouldn't give many examples, but we talk about Tandi Klaassen, and she was an amazing singer, but she was also a victim of acid attacks. And to explain to little girls, like, what is gender-based violence? What is an acid attack?
That's it.
Phoebe completely understood, and she understood why we wanted to tell it, because if there's a little girl who's, I don't know, seeing her mom or is herself a victim of domestic violence or gender-based violence, you know, we wanted to create a space that was so safe that you didn't need to feel othered. You could come to, you know, whoever you trusted, and I hope sincerely they have spaces that they trust, you know, that they can tell these stories to. But we didn't want to make it and then they lived happily ever after.
Of course,
that is not a real story.
Yes, and it's not life.
To feel like everything you go through is okay. It's normal. You're not strange. You're not, you know, your story is perfectly okay because it's your story, and what you make out of it is for you to decide.
And I love the fact that you draw upon that, because at the end of the day, whether we are visual or literary audiences, we respond to realism. And at the end of the day, you know, life is not smooth sailing, and we take comfort in the, and it doesn't offer any false promises either. It just, it tells their stories as they happened, their triumphs, their tribulations, and what they still may be facing at this point in time, you know, because of course, many of them, you've got one or two that have passed on, because I see, for instance, like you said, as the late Tandi Klaassen, the late Miriam Makeba, and of course, you've got current trailblazers, for instance, Portia Modise from Banyana Banyana. So, you know,
that was important to have current people who were just literally setting the world on fire.
And there have been, and I mean, being part for people like Portia Modise, who's part of, you know, such a just a brilliant soccer team and a female soccer team, Banyana Banyana, and also when you have different people from just all different walks of life, it's just it's and even if the readers of these books, the little girls and boys are told one narrative that they can only follow this path, this book clearly demonstrates that actually there are many paths available to you. It's what feels right for you. It's about owning your purpose, and it's about just, you know, owning your own narrative and just being proud of your Africanness. And I think this book just successfully achieves that.
Thank you.
It's so impressive. I mean, I'm just looking through the Facebook, looking at the Facebook page right now. I must say, I'm impressed by the your avatars. I must love that. It's just such a personal. I just love that touch to it.
Pretty cute. We're pretty proud of them.
Yes,
they look ridiculous. We love them.
Who created the avatars?
Kaloza,
the
art department.
Oh, okay, fantastic, perfect. I love it because, again, the fact that you are in an avatar form, it makes you even more relatable as the authors to the readers. And, you know, when it comes to when it comes to the structure of the book, when they open the book, I heard you mentioning earlier just about the fact that there's a comic strip, and, you know, just can you go into more detail about the format?
The book is divided into five chapters,
yes,
which each have a which begin with a sentence that affirms. So I love myself, I have voice, I have fighting power. And each chapter, for example, we've got a hair doctor in chapter one. And in chapter two, we may have, now I'm spilling. in chapter two, and between the two chapters, we'll have a comic strip which talks to I have voice or I have fighting power. So the avatars are in that comic strip, and we're sort of having a conversation amongst ourselves as authors, saying things like, you know, it's okay to be sad, but you can pick yourself up.
Yes.
You know, sometimes, you know, it's hard. I compare myself to other people.
Yes, yes.
But you know what? I am. No one is better than my own version of myself. And those are the kind of comic strips that we have. And obviously, visually, it was important for us for, you know, Natasha to have her African hair, whatever that means, but her afro. and another avatar, me with braids, and Tandy with her hair. And all of us are sort of normal-looking girls, not your, let me say, model figures that are unrealistic.
Exactly.
That was very important as well to sort of reflect. And that's the setup. And at the back, there is a sort of glossary explaining certain terms like homosexuality, gender-based violence. It's all included at the back of the book as like a dictionary.
Oh, that's fantastic. So when it comes to just unpacking certain terms, especially because at the end of the day, children are inquisitive and they will ask questions. So to have that handy and ready without feeling too tongue-tied as a parent,
lot of time.
Exactly.
Like, Mom, what is LGBTIQ? But I feel like they're going to happen regardless.
Exactly. They can just turn to the glossary and there we go. Answer found. You've saved them so much time, and it's ever so convenient. Yeah. And Anna, I want to come back to the reversible English and Zulu, book, just the format of it, and also just looking at how, you know, this is just actually quite extraordinary, because now you've got, it's a bilingual publication on either side.
Yeah.
And then now the million-dollar question is, will there be plans in the future to also publish in other South African languages?
Yes. Yes, there is. Yes. There's definitely plans to.
Yes. Oh, brilliant. Yes. And then which language would you start off with first after this? Or would it just be an entire...
We're not going to answer that because we're not promoting tribalism.
Yes, exactly. Good call. Yes.
No, honestly, we haven't planned it. It's just always been a value from the beginning that it was definitely going to be translated to, you know, at least three other South African languages. But we honestly haven't decided. I can't tell you.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, I will wait with bated breath for this one to come out. Yes. And, of course, all of the other languages. But, of course, you know, me being Tswana, I'd love to see that in print. That would be extraordinary, you know. Yes. Yeah. And then for both of you, I've got two more questions before we wrap up. I'm really enjoying this discussion. And then just to ask you, Baba, when it comes to just the overall, just the book, just in general, overall for you personally, what would you want this book to accomplish, especially in the long term?
Yes, Babs, as an economist, what do you want this to accomplish?
I'm kidding.
I would love for one child, boy or girl, or neither, to feel like they're valid. That's what I would want.
That they matter, that they have purpose.
They matter, they have voice,
they're worthy.
Choose something and change their minds and still be. You know, you can be, decide you want to be a CA one, you know, pursue it and change your mind and be a graphic designer, whatever you choose to do,
yes.
You know, I feel in any of those spaces, being valid as feeling valid is such an important element to succeeding. And another thing is, other than an internal thing that I would want a child to pick up from the book, I would want, from this reading the stories and interpreting them, even if a child has never been abused or felt sad and suffered from, you know, mental health issues, I'd want them to have compassion for others who do. And I think that's the second thing that I would want. Yeah.
That's fantastic, and I definitely agree with that. And Natasha, do you have any different goals for this in regards to what you'd love to see in the long term, and the impact that her story Umlando Wakhe will actually have for our young readers?
No, because I feel like Baba stole my answers.
Oh, okay. Well, as long as you're in agreement.
Yes. Well, I would hope so, because you know, it's the same vision as mine. I think it's just, you know, to say it in a different way, I hope that whoever reads it, whether, you know, it's in the 30 stories or in something they see in their own life, that they never feel alone. They never feel other to the point of inadequacy, you know, that it's just your story is your own and it's beautiful and it's yours and you own it, and it might suck and it might hurt or it might be amazing and, you know, you don't know how to describe it, but it's yours and there's no need to feel lonely. But I think that and, God, just empathy and open-mindedness for other people, I think one of the things that sort of is a common thread throughout the stories is that everybody's story is different and you don't get to judge anybody else's story. You don't,
yes.
You don't get to make somebody feel other. You don't get to make somebody feel different or less than or alone. So as much as, you know, empathy is important, and, you know, you need to be open-minded and, you know, we know it's idyllic, but if it's just one person, one little girl, one little boy, one little person who doesn't want to subscribe to any gender, then good God, like, you know, go on with your bad self. Do it all, you know?
Do you.
Oh, I love that. Do you. Hashtag do you. Love it, love it. Yes, exactly. Just to round that off. And then, of course, yes, the million-dollar question. When will this be released and where will it be available? And, of course, how much?
It's 1 million rand.
It's worth a million. Trust me, with the stories there. Yes, yes.
It's worth what Cape Townians pay for water. It's 250 rand.
Yes,
we'll be in bookstores. It will be, you know, an exclusive. It will be in little independent bookstores, which we're so excited about. But above and beyond everything, will be available online on kalozabooks.com. So if you go into their books, you can order it online, and it will be delivered to your doorstep. You don't even, you know, gosh, going into malls and shops is so horribly inconvenient in 2018. So okay. You may as well just order it online
and sure.
Deliver to you.
Yes.
To you. Yeah.
For added convenience, of course.
Yeah, yes. Exactly.
Yeah, that's it. Ah, Natasha, Baba, I must say I've really, really had such a fantastic time just speaking to the both of you. I'm going to purchase the copy. And it's been a pleasure, absolutely. And, you know, you've inspired so many moms and dads listening right now who are going to be scrambling for this information. So, I'm sure they'll be on Facebook, on Instagram, wherever, you know, so please do Google her story, / Umlando Wakhe. And yes, you will definitely, definitely be wowed. I am wowed just speaking to the both of you. I can't wait to read it and can't wait to read it to my nephew. Thank you both.
Thank you.
For this beautiful. And of course, yes.
Thank you.
And thank you for your time. And of course, I must also say thank you to the third author. Yes, the third co-author, Thandiwe Matthews. Yes, so thank all three of you, actually. And I wish you all the best with this publication, and may it continue to go from strength to strength and impact many people's lives in the most positive way.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.